Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Power of Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Power of Love, sponsored by the Dede Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. I am TJ Jackson, and with me, I have my two brothers, Taj and Terrell Jackson. How are you guys?
What's going on?
Nothing much. I feel good right now. Feel fueled. I feel refreshed. I'm ready for the show. For those who are listening, we are live on Power of Love. If you're listening, of course you are. Thank you for joining us. Later on in the show, we're going to open up.
You meant listening live.
If you're listening live.
That's what
yes.
you wanted to say.
We're going to open up phone calls. Are we? I don't know. We have a guest, so maybe we shouldn't. We'll see how it goes.
Because, I mean, she might want to take some questions.
That's true. But the one thing that is always open is Twitter.
Yes.
Social media. And we have Taj here. He's back, so he can man the Twitter handle. So if there's any questions, comments, concerns, any stats, any facts that you want to share with the community, do so via Twitter. And Taj is our gatekeeper. He'll see if it's worthy, right, Taj?
Yeah, of course.
Twitter handle is at DDJ Foundation.
Beautiful. Beautiful. We are not licensed therapists. This is the disclaimer. We are not licensed therapists. We're just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it, and we've learned from it. So we want to share our opinions and attempt to help you overcome whatever it is you're going through. Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and to find it. Please don't just rely on us. So, we have a great show lined up.
Yes, we do.
Great guests.
Super excited about
this. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Before we get into that, though, we got to break down our week. How was your guys' week? And Taj, for you, it's been 2 weeks. But tell me what's been going on.
Everything's been going well. It's all family. You know, so that was always good. You know, everyone got together. So that was a lot of fun. But besides that, had been in the editing bay.
Yeah.
Doing a music video.
Yeah, for the release of Fire.
Yes.
3T song.
So, yeah.
Good job, Taj.
Yeah, you did a very good job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, so I'm a little more energized now. I was just come from some rough days, but very excited at the feedback.
Well, it's great. Great video, and the feedback's been great.
Yeah, feedback's been great. So thank you guys very much. And
you did a great job.
Thank you. That's hard for you to say.
Well, it's not that it's hard for me to say.
It's your brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
You did an okay job.
Thank you.
Terrell, what you been up to?
My week was bittersweet.
Bittersweet?
It was good and bad.
What happened?
Talk to us.
Well, first with baseball. Bryce's team played exactly a week ago, and we had the game. We had the game in our possession. We were gonna win and move on to the semis, and we fell apart. So he got eliminated. So he's out. Adrian, on the other hand, his team played on Sunday for what they call the Jamboree. And our team won the Jamboree. So we're advancing to the playoffs. We have a game tomorrow. If we win that game, then we play in the championship on Saturday.
Whoa.
So
you're excited about that?
Yep.
The possibility.
Yep.
How did Bryce take it?
He didn't take it well.
The
thing that was hard is because when his team lost, they weren't immediately out of it.
Oh, it was one of
you waiting, almost had to see what the other team did.
Oh, that's horrible.
And the other team,
yeah,
the team we beat actually is the team that's going ahead.
Oh.
But you know.
But it seemed like your whole season was a really tough season. But it seems like you guys kind of pulled it together at the end and became
a little bit
competitive.
We're inconsistent.
Yeah,
which happens with kids. So
yes,
you know, it's just about experiences, and hopefully they got some good ones.
Good. They have to learn loss early.
Yep, and then of course there's the Cleveland Warriors series going on. And
I think that's enough sports though, because I don't know how many listeners.
You asked me what my week was like
when you said Cleveland.
You asked me what my week was like. I'm just telling you my frustrations. But all right, that's it.
So
that's all I got.
And then for me, I just had open house.
All right.
I think that's the highlight of the week. I got to see my girls, their schoolwork.
Oh, that's always fun.
And they had some pretty good, cool projects. You know, Dee Dee was, they didn't just write a book, but they actually created a book. Mm. So it was really, it was really cool to see her create a book, literally, not just the pages of a story, but also to have like a table of contents and a hardcover book with the pictures and even the dedication page. And I was really pleased to see that she dedicated the book to her teachers.
Oh, that's cool. Do you see the different personalities come out when you go to these open houses?
Yeah. You know what it is, Taj? It's not necessarily just in the work. It's when they're amongst their friends.
Uh-huh.
Because the open house is a time where they're at school, but it's in non-school hours. So there's something kind of exciting and mystique for the kids, and then they have their friends, and they're not in, they don't have their bags. So
yeah,
it's just like freedom, and their parents are there, so I think they're also a little excited for that. So you get to see how your kids kind of interact with teachers and other kids from the school. But So open house is beautiful.
Cool.
I know you're looking forward to that, Taj.
Yeah.
All right, should we go straight into it?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
We have a wonderful guest today. Her name is Lauren Schneider. She's the Clinical Director of Child and Adolescent Programs at Our House Grief Support Center here in Los Angeles. Lauren is a nationally recognized authority on children's grief, has provided trainings for mental health clinicians, educators, clergy, healthcare providers, and graduate students throughout the community since 2000. Lauren is also the author of Children Grief 2, a handbook for parents of grieving children. She also created My Memory Book for Grieving Children, as well as grief-related curricula for use at Camp Aaron, Los Angeles, and in Our House Grief Support Groups. Finally, I'm going to say this. Lauren is the associate producer of One Last Hug and A Few Smooches, an Emmy Award-winning HBO documentary about children's grief. She trains and supervises Our House group leaders, as well as MSW and MFT clinicians and students. She maintains a private practice in Los Angeles specializing in grief and loss. A very accomplished guest we have today. And without further ado, Lauren, are you with us?
I sure am.
It's so great to have you on our show. You are.
Thank you. Great to be here.
When we created the Power of Love show, you were like the perfect guest we envisioned. It's someone that has the expertise and experience in dealing with grief and especially... for all people, but with even a focus on children. I don't know if you know our story. We lost our mother at a young age, and we're just now getting to a point in life, 20 years later, where you never fully understand it, but we're getting to a point where we feel like we're getting somewhat of a handle on the situation. So it's just a blessing. It's a blessing to have you with us. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me. That's a very common story that kids don't necessarily get the support they need when they're very young.
Yeah.
And it takes till they become adults for them to get, to cope with it in an adult way and get the support that they didn't have initially.
Yeah. And I think for us, I mean, we had a big family. We have a big family and a lot of friends that were there supporting us. I just think it was such a shock and such a foreign thing that no one really knew exactly what to do. And that's probably will lead into my first question to you, Lauren, is I know that, traumatic losses is incredibly difficult for everyone. But when it's kind of a specialized situation in terms of whether it's a murder, whether it's a terrorist incident, or whether it's, overdose, basically like an unexpected tragedy, how does that differ, or what's the approach like for that? When you're for children, what can you do as an adult? What can we do as an adult for children who experience trauma like that?
Right. Well, that's such a good question because of what happened to your mom. And like you said, you had a really big family, but they were all grieving too.
Yeah.
And so they're not the same grown-ups that they were before the death of their loved one.
Mm.
So in a sense... your dad and your grandma and your grandpa or whoever else was there as your main support systems are different than they were the day before the homicide.
Yep.
So then it's really important that a team be assembled in a sense to fill in the gaps while the whole family is grieving. So there are similarities and there are differences, of course, depending on the circumstances of the death. And you know, for one, just the suddenness that the children are unprepared. There's no opportunity to say goodbye, which is what one of the things that I have noticed is the hardest about the sudden deaths, whether it's a homicide or a suicide or an overdose death. The fact that the kids did not get to say goodbye leaves them with a very different set of feelings than children who perhaps could say goodbye because their person was dying, let's say, of a prolonged illness like a cancer death.
We were talking about that, and that's something we've over the year and a half or so we've done the show, we've always discussed that, and we couldn't really articulate the differences, but the difference of saying goodbye to a loved one, a parent, when they're taken immediately from you, I should say the difference between being able to say goodbye and see someone deteriorate to death versus someone just instantly taken away from you. What approaches would you, I know it's not easy to, and I know every case is different, but is there any kind of general thing that you would advise someone who is a friend or a family member of someone who's dealing with that?
Well, you know, I would encourage people to look for programs like our, if you have listeners that are outside of the area that we serve here in Los Angeles, there are programs around the country and camps. Camp Aaron is in 46 different cities in the United States, and some of our activities, both in our school-based program and in our camp program, are designed specifically to help children express their you know, what they wish that they could have said to that loved one if they had had an opportunity to see them, you know, to say goodbye or to see them one more time. And so that might be in a letter writing activity or to say it out loud. We have a beautiful ceremony I can tell you about that we do at camp, which is the highlight of our camp weekend. It's a luminary floating ceremony, and that is overridingly most popular activity for the whole weekend, where the children create these floating luminaries and come up and say goodbye one at a time or I love you out loud, and then we watch them float out on the pool under the stars, and they feel as though they are really getting a chance to express that, you know, that which they didn't really have a chance to do. So letter writing, you know, that can be done at home. It can be done with a therapist, journaling, you know, you can create ceremonies to do some kind of a goodbye like people have done for years, you know, a note in a bottle and throw it in the ocean, or a note attached to a balloon, you know, and let the balloon fly away. Those kinds of things can feel really good in that circumstance.
Okay, so one more question. Oh, there's going to be many questions, but one more before I let my brothers do some talking. But here's my question. This is something that in researching you, you're strong on telling children in an basically the truth of what happened. No sugarcoating. But just telling someone, telling the children what happened in an age-appropriate language is the term I think you use. Because if not, then when they eventually learn the truth, they may resent you and see you as someone who will not give them the truth. Can you just elaborate a bit on that?
Sure. That's a pretty prevailing view of people that do the kind of work that I do, that it's important to be honest with kids, because the truth is they will find out eventually. There are certain kinds of deaths in particular that adults think they have to shield the children, you know, one being homicide, one being suicide, and then the drug-related deaths. But what we've noticed is that even if they make up another cause of death, like they might say, oh, he died from a heart attack, or she died, you know, she died in her sleep, something like that, the kids overhear conversations in the house.
Yeah.
And are much more aware of what's going on than their grown-up really wants, you know, really is aware of or wants to admit. So that's that they actually know, but because they're not being told the truth, it creates a very uncomfortable state for them where their inner reality doesn't match their outer reality. And it's not a healthy place for a child to be. Another thing that can happen is when they are told the truth, like what you just said, TJ, then they get really mad at all the people that they feel have lied to them, because to them it feels like a lie. They don't see it as, you know, as a protective measure. They just feel like they have been lied to. And so then on top of it, they're very angry. And a lot of therapists actually participate in that kind of mistruth and will go along with what the adult says and not be truthful with their clients. And so then when that child finds out, then they mistrust therapists and they don't want to go to therapists anymore either. So if they're told the truth, in incremental ways, in small way, bits of information at a time, then they're perfectly capable of tolerating that information. And we have a rule around here, we call it the golden rule, that if you ask the child, do you have any questions about what we just said, if they ask a question about it, that means they're old enough to hear the answer.
Okay.
So that's how we know how much more information they're ready to hear.
Wow, I like that.
So if they're asking questions, and even though it's difficult to maybe answer them, or you prefer to wait to answer them later, if they're asking questions, you should answer them, you're saying?
Yeah, that means that their brain is developed enough, they're cognitively ready to formulate, you know, to process that information. So then you can answer it. If they're not old enough to form the question, their brain hasn't developed enough, they don't need to be given that information. So say you have a 4-year-old in the room and you have a 9-year-old in the room and you're breaking the news to them about a parent's, let's say, homicide. The 9-year-old may want to know where it happened or where in the body the bullet went. The 4-year-old isn't going to ask either of those things.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to want to know, you know, when daddy's coming home again, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Something like that. So because their brains are not processing the information the same way.
That's very strong. Okay. And then do you ever advise or do you think it's a good idea? How do you deal with this? Because this is something I've always struggled with. I don't know if I should be proactive talking about that, if it should be one of those things where I don't talk about it unless I'm asked. How? And I'm taking more of a role. Let's say I was a big brother of a younger sibling that lost their best friend.
Okay.
Is it my job? Whose job is it? Like, is it... I'm just confused on if I should be approaching it, if I should be sitting them down. Should it be done in a formal setting? Should it be done very loose? Should I just let them sit? What would you advise in terms of the best way for an older close family member to deal with a loss for a younger family member?
Well, you know, it depends on what your relationship is. But, you know, if you have a good relationship, you can let them know from the beginning that you're there for them if they feel like talking, and you know, let them know that when you see them that you've been thinking about them, and, you know, maybe to bring up the name of the person who died. I've been thinking about your friend, Sam, and, you know, I remember this time you and Sam went with me over to, you know, to the Staples Center to see the Lakers or whatever, you know, and just talk to them about the good times for a while, because that's what a lot of people don't do with the kids, is they're afraid to bring the person up because they think it'll make the kids cry. But it actually is helpful to them to reminisce about the happy times. That actually, it releases endorphins, and it's comforting to them to have a grown-up that they can reminisce with about the good times. And then, like, once you've done that, you can say, so how's it been at home for you? You know, who have you been going to when you need a hug, and, you know, and that kind of, or is there anything else I could do for you? That you can have that kind of conversation.
And then if you're not getting any type of response, or if you're just getting short answers or basically nothing, is that your cue to stop talking or stop questioning? Or is that something more of a sign to continue forward?
It really depends on the kids. You know, you're not there as their therapist. You're there as their cousin or their uncle, you're saying, or their friend. And sometimes you just do something fun together that you enjoy doing, like go in the backyard and shoot baskets, or whatever it is you like to do. Go listen to music together, and, you know, and just let them know that you're available to talk about it if they feel like it. And when they feel comfortable, they'll bring it up to you.
That's great.
But just, you know, always make sure that you say, you know, so how have you been doing this week? Or, you know, how was it being at school this week, you know, without Sergio, or, you know, whatever the friend's name is.
Yeah.
So keep checking that.
So
one.
In other words, you name the elephant in the room.
Yeah, that's great.
We have a Twitter question from Marlene. She wants to know, how do you define children or teenagers who have such pain that they need more serious care than others?
Okay, that's a great question. A lot of grown-ups, they think that the children have to be in therapy after they've experienced a death. And in fact, I just took a call from somebody right before this, like that, a mom. And remember, grief is a natural response to a life cycle event. So when a death occurs, the way adults and children respond is just normal. It's normal to be grieving. It's normal to be in pain, to be sad and mad and, you know, worried and all of those things, to feel guilty. Those are normal human emotions to a normal thing that happens to every single human being. When it does not mean that a person needs to be in therapy. The things that would require therapy, though, is if a child is really isolating, like they refusing to go to school, you know, for weeks after the death, if they're not able to do their homework at all, you know, like their grades really plummet and they're completely unable to focus, they're losing sleep or not eating. They don't want to get together with their friends. They just are like isolating in their room. Mm-hmm. Or they're completely avoiding being at home. Like after school, they're just like kind of like in manically, like staying really, really busy all the time just to avoid coming home because it's too sad at home. What I would just say is if two or more things are happening outside of the house that concern you, then that would probably be a sign that you might need some professional help. But being sad, you know, because your mom died or your brother died or something like that, that's normal. Mm-hmm. That's normal. And as hard as it is, Marlene, or for any grown-up to see their child in pain, there's nothing that you can really do that's going to fix that. They're going to have to go through it, you know, and we, the adults, are going to just have to be there. And they will come through it. Most kids are extremely resilient. I have really good statistics on the resiliency of kids who've had a parent that died. And it's as high as like 90% of children come out of that, you know, a kind of a that period of that childhood period without developing any form of mental illness at all, including depression.
Wow. That's a very strong number, which is great.
Yeah.
Here would be my follow-up question. Is there anything, I know it's 90%, but is there anything we could do as adults that can even make that number higher? Is there anything we could do to help foster that resilience even more so?
Well, of course, I'm going to recommend that they go again to a program, because one of the things, you know, going back to your very first question, you know, that it's very hard for children to experience these kinds of deaths. And you're going to remember this, TJ, because it makes you feel different than the other kids at school.
Very true.
You know, you guys were the guy whose mom died.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other kids in the class had not had that happen. And so, and feeling different is extremely painful for you when you're a child, and even more painful if it happens when you're a teenager. It's real important to, like, identify with your peer group, you know, to have a peer group that you fit in with. So we strongly recommend that you get your child into a support group or a grief camp like our camp, so that they can be with other children and that are going through the same thing, and it's incredibly comforting for them to see that they're not the only one that it happened to.
Right.
There's this like almost instantaneous release that happens when we're going up there on Friday for our first session, and they get off the bus, and you can just feel like this like relaxation kind of come over them that, oh, we're here among our people now.
Mm.
You know, these people all get it.
Mm.
And they form these really very quickly, these strong bonds with each other.
That's great. That's great stuff.
Yeah, they need that.
Now on another topic, is there a certain thing you would do or you recommend when we have to prepare our children for memorial services or funeral? Is there anything, what advice would you give for us?
Well, I definitely recommend that kids be included in whatever the mourning ritual is for the family. So there's so many different variations, but definitely include the kids, even little ones like toddlers. But, of course, very young children need to have somebody that's going to accompany them, so that if let's say dad dies, mom is going to not have to be the primary caregiver for her children during the service. She needs to be fully present for the service, but maybe auntie will be there, so auntie can take the kids out for a little break if they need to. The kids can't be expected to sit through a service, you know, a viewing, a rosary, whatever the kind of service, a celebration of life, whatever the variation is in the culture. The kids go and they sit as long as they can, and then auntie or, you know, the cousins, whatever, they go out and play. They get snacks when they need it. They come back in when they feel like it. That has to be permitted. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be expected to act like grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can be prepared ahead of time, or need to be prepared what to expect. You know, who's going to be there? If there's an open casket, what to expect when they go to a viewing? And they can pick out an item to place in the casket, or draw or write a note to put in the casket. And that makes that a much less frightening thing, and really a very meaningful thing for them. It gives them, it's empowering, like, oh, well, I wrote a poem and I put it in my dad's pocket, or I brought his favorite. I know a kid who said, well, my dad liked golf, so I brought one of his golf clubs and I put it in the casket in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
So it, instead of it being a scary thing like a lot of adults experienced when they were children, it then becomes like a family ritual that they participated in too. And their friends should be invited and their teachers from school will come. I've heard even principals will come, you know, so that the kids have their people there too, not just the adults.
Now, I'm going to ask you another question, and you could plead the fifth on this, because I don't know if this is something you would want to answer. But taking out religion or any spiritual things like that, open casket versus closed casket, what do you think is best for children, or what do you see? Is there any type of thing? What would you suggest? And again, you could plead the fifth, but I'm just very curious on that.
I think that whatever is the family tradition is okay.
Okay.
That there's pros and cons of each. I'm not going to say one is better than the other, but if the family likes to do a viewing, then like I said, you just prepare the children for what to expect. I've had children tell me that when they viewed their parents' body, that they, you know, that they looked peaceful. Like I just said, you know, that they put items in the casket that were meaningful to them. And I've also heard the opposite, you know, that they didn't look the same, that they felt cold and that kind of thing. Uh-huh. But they have to be prepared, and they also have, the one thing I would say, if there will be an open casket, you just have to invite them in a positive way. So if your family's tradition is to go to a viewing, you just say, okay, so what we're going to be doing today is all of us with Grandma and, you know, Auntie Pauline and this one and that one, we're all going to be going and we're going to see Daddy's body in the casket and say goodbye to his body one more time before he's buried or before it's cremated. And why don't we all write some notes that we can put in the casket? You know, you invite them like you're inviting them to go out on a family picnic. Okay. You know, if you say it in a way that's going to scare them, like, I don't know if you guys are going to want to do this. You may not want to do it. Then you're putting fear into their head. Mm-hmm. So if the family really buys into the tradition, then invite them like it's a normal part of the culture of our family, and of course you're included. Why don't you guys go get dressed? We're going to the viewing today. Mm-hmm. You know, like we go to Auntie Sally's house on Thanksgiving, right? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's very helpful. So thank you. Yeah.
The time it backfires is when, if the grown-ups are all freaked out about it, the kids are going to pick up on that, and then it becomes a very negative and scary thing.
I wanted to bring back something that you mentioned earlier because it really resonated with me when you said that the adults aren't the same adults, you know, before the death. And that was mm-hmm. something that was really not shocking to me, but it really rang true because my dad, who had been this rock for me, had been mm-hmm. the stature of strength, you know, really took my mom's death hard to the point where he was completely the opposite. And it really, it almost threw me off even more in a way, because then I didn't know how to react in a way. And
right.
I totally
wanted to protect him.
Yeah,
too.
I totally understood it, mm-hmm. you know, now, but back then. So yeah, I just, that was something that rang true to me because yeah, you think that the adults will be the same, or this person's always strong, so he'll be strong again, or she will be strong again. And that's not always the case.
Yeah, especially the first year. Adults will show their grief on the outside because, you know, that's just how adults do it. Kids will hide their grief on the inside because they don't want to be teased or, you know, they're afraid of looking different than other kids and stuff. And so seeing their, you know, for you guys, seeing your dad openly grieving your mom must have been, you know, scary and confusing and all those things. So you probably kept a lot of your own grief on the inside, I would guess, for that first year, because you wouldn't want to overwhelm him. And sometimes that becomes a pattern first in some families where the kids really don't go to their surviving parent for support because of that. You know, so what we always say when parents come here, the kids are very worried about their surviving parent, almost every family that I see. We encourage the grown-up to say to the child, you know, don't worry if I look sad. I'm strong enough to take care of us, and I'm strong enough to comfort you when you need, you know, when you feel sad and when, you know, and I'm here to take care of you, and we're going to be okay. We're going to get through this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. We're here live on The Power of Love with Lauren Schneider. And Lauren, I wanted to talk real quick about your books. You okay. wrote Children Grieve Too, A Handbook for Parents of Grieving Children. Is that something that we could find at like Amazon.com?
I believe so. We sell it from our website.
Okay. If you could, what is the website?
It's ourhouse-grief.org.
Okay. And then
it's a real basic, it's a basic handbook, just the like essential things that we want people to know, especially if it's one of the parents that has died.
Mm. Great. Okay, and then you also have another book called My Memory Book for Grieving Children, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a little like a little workbook that adults would do with a young child. You could do it with a 3-year-old, maybe up to about a 10-year-old, who would do most of the work themselves, where they draw or write responses to different prompts on different pages.
For a loved one that is deceased.
Yes.
That's great. That's great.
That's available on our website also.
That's beautiful.
Or by calling the office. You can call our office and get copies mailed to you.
Okay, and what is that number, Lauren, just in case someone would prefer to call?
Okay, I'm looking for our toll-free number to give you that. It's 888-417-1444.
Beautiful. Okay.
Lauren, I wanted to talk about grief and healing and the grieving process. I know everybody heals and grieves differently, but with children and adults, what would you say are the main differences between the two when dealing with healing and grieving? What are the main differences, and what are some pointers and tips that you can give to us when dealing with children that, you know, are different than when dealing with an adult?
Okay. Well, one thing was what I was touching on a few minutes ago, that they may not look like they're grieving at first because they're not sitting around and on the couch, you know, crying or expressing their grief outwardly the way adults do when there's been a death in the family. You know, they're out back playing with their cousins, or they're burying their heads in their computers. And so kids at first are dealing with it by distraction. They're trying to distract themselves from the reality that this person has died. And they're going to try and do that as long as they can and pretend that things are normal as long as they can. And obviously that can't go on for very long. So it starts getting harder as the weeks go by. And then you start seeing them start to fray around the edges, you know, where they're, you know, they start breaking down or becoming irritable or having, you know, starting to have some outbursts and that kind of thing, and tears. And it depends what the age of the child is. So very young children don't understand that death is permanent and irreversible until they're about 6 or so. So the kids up until that age, their brain development hasn't reach the point, so they're going to be expecting whoever died to come back. Mm. And no matter how many times you say, no, Granny's not, Granny died, remember we told you she went to heaven? They think that Granny's in heaven, but that Granny will be back in time for Christmas or in time for their birthday party. And they're going to go on believing that until either their brain matures a little bit more, meaning they reach the next level of cognitive development, or another Christmas goes by and Granny still isn't come back. So enough time has to go by that they learn it or their brain develops. So once they get to grade school, they understand that death is permanent, but they still think about death in immature ways, not the way adults do. They think of it more concretely and almost as if death is like a person that sweeps in and takes people away, and they can't cope with it in the way adults can. And even teens who think that they're, you know, should be, have all the same rights as adults, their brains are still developing too. And because they're more impulsive and sometimes lack the ability to make good judgments and, you know, good decisions and can be very moody, all of those same problems that get in the way of teens in their everyday life, those kinds of things impact their grieving process too. So the teens need a lot of support because the way they cope with their grief can be very dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
I almost worry about them the most.
Yeah.
Understandably.
Especially they're with already, their peers as well.
And they're already tough to crack because, you know, you don't yeah. have the thing. They don't like to talk, so I get that.
They'll talk.
You know, if you put them in a group, they'll talk, but
they feel comfortable
to talk one on one with their dad or with their mom. That's a little bit harder.
That makes sense. I had a question, Lauren. In terms of, because you've been doing this for a long period of time and helping people mm-hmm. for a long period of time. Obviously, when you first started, though, you were, and you know, with anything, you learn on the way. You make adjustments. You kind of fine tune things. Is there some, mm-hmm. looking back at your younger self and thinking, is there anything that you are like, oh, wow, that was kind of, I would have done it differently now in terms of, you know, taking it in terms of our point of view, you know, parents or in general, and being like, okay, that was a misconception, and this is actually, it was completely opposite of what people think in terms of that for grieving and kids.
That's a good question. I wish I had more time to think about that. I think that my understanding of deaths due to suicide has really evolved a lot, and the conversation about it has changed. Mm. That you know, we used to say some things in, like, in the late 90s and early part of this century, we used to say stuff like, well, suicide is never the answer, and, you know, and those kinds of things were very stigmatizing for the families, the survivors, and, you know, and now we're very careful not to put blame on the person who died, that instead we teach the children whose parent suicides or their big brother suicides. And I mean, I had someone walk in my office today and she told me her son's best friend just killed himself. And what we say instead now is that person had a disease and they were suffering from a disease, only it's a disease. I say it's an invisible disease or a disease on the inside that you can't see, but it's still a disease that needs treatment. Mm-hmm. And it's not that he made a bad decision. He just had a disease that needed treatment. And that's what caused him to feel so badly that he ended his life.
Got it.
So we're much more sensitive towards the survivors.
That's good.
And
to
it's
know.
True. Yeah. It's true that very, very, very high percentage of people that die by suicide are suffering from either depression or bipolar disorder at the time that they do complete the suicide.
Mm. Lauren, I ask this question a lot to our guests, and I was wondering if you would share, not if you don't feel comfortable, but I was wondering, because death and loss is something that you don't really understand until you go through it yourself. I was wondering if you could share the very first time that you experienced a loss that hit home.
For my story is kind of different. I grew up in a family. My mom survived the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. So I remember as a very young girl hearing her and her sister and her cousins, who all of them were hidden together in an attic. And their story is, quite just very, it was very disturbing when I heard it the first time as a little girl. And they talked about how, my grandmother died then right in front of my mother, and she was 6 years old. And so in a sense, my mother was a grieving child, and death was just a big, big part of our family. These people, even though I grew up with death, I should say. Mm. So, and I naturally kind of gravitated towards the field because I had been dealing with death and grieving children who were now in the bodies of adults kind of my whole life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
So that happened, that awareness of all of that happened probably when I was about 8 years old. Yeah. I think was the first time I really remembered understanding what my mom had been through.
Okay, so Lauren, we have just...
Did that answer your question?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We have just...
It wasn't what you expected me to say, probably.
We like surprises.
Yeah, in sixth grade, my dog died. He ran out in the street and he got hit by a car. That was probably the first death that I witnessed myself.
Same with us. It was,
oh,
it was
really?
Dogs. Yeah, dogs.
That was horrible.
I didn't witness it, but, we found a dog under the bed who passed.
Oh,
that was one, yeah.
Yeah, and we've always had a lot of pets, and so we pet losses are real. The pain.
They
is real.
Are for sure.
Yeah, we have a couple minutes left, Lauren, and I wanted to talk to you about our house.
Okay.
You guys are in your 25th year, is that right? For
25. Yes, we are.
Congratulations!
This is a very big year.
That's amazing. You guys provide resources, support, and care at the moment when we need it most. You reach individuals, families, organizations, and communities in need when someone dies, guiding people through a delicate process of grief. One of your programs is called Camp Aaron. You guys do it twice every summer. Is this correct? Correct me if I'm wrong on something. Please.
We
stop.
Do. We have two sessions in Malibu and one session actually in Orange County. So there's three Our House Camp Aaron sessions.
Okay, and the Camp Aaron sessions is where you guys give grieving children between 6 and 17 years old the opportunity to bond with others in a safe, playful setting. Is this correct?
That's correct,
okay.
Yes.
So,
yes, and we still are accepting applications for our August session.
Okay.
So people can get an application on our website. They just fill it out online, and it comes to us directly. And then we'll get in touch with them. We still have spots available for August.
Oh, wonderful.
It's August 17th through the 19th.
Is there any financial commitment that the family?
No, that's free. Free of charge to the family.
Yeah. And is it like a weekend type of camp? Or is it,
it is. It's two nights from Friday through Sunday.
Okay. And then,
amazing.
Again, I believe you could find the app on the website, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay. And one more time for the website.
The website is ourhouse-grief.org.
That's great. Okay, and I can attest to this because we've been to many different types of camps, and these camps is one camp we went to. I saw where the kids, when they first get there, they're kind of quiet, But once one kid opens up and tells his story, it's like a huge weight is lifted off these kids. And I just commend all of you at our house who do these kind of things. And really, you guys are amazing.
It's life-changing.
It's life-changing for them.
You should come up. You can come up as a guest on Saturday.
I think I would love to. So,
well, call me later. We'll arrange it.
I will. I will. So, okay. And then you also, you guys also do something year-round. For teens, adults, and children. We only have 1 minute, so if you could just tell me a bit.
Okay, sorry. We do. We have groups year-round for adults in three locations in Los Angeles, support groups, and they're age and relationship specific. And we have an enormous school-based program in public schools throughout Los Angeles County. And listeners, if they'd like their child to be in a school group, can request a group at their public school or charter or magnet school. Just go in and say, can we get an Our House group here at the school? And the school can contact us and we'll try and make that happen. And our groups are led by volunteers. And if you're interested in being a group leader, a grief group leader, you can find information about volunteering on the website also.
That's great. And you, I assume you have to be 18 to be a group leader, correct?
Well, 21.
21. Yeah,
21. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Lauren, first of all, on behalf of my brothers, thank you so much for your
time.
You're
welcome.
You've been incredibly...
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
You've
been so informative. As I spoke to you before the show, we like to give our guests 30 seconds or so to say whatever's on your mind or share whatever final information. Any leaving thoughts you have, anything you want to plug, it's your floor. So 30 seconds. What do you got for us, Lauren?
I'm happy to answer questions that people who are listening have. You can give us a call and ask to speak to me if this brought up any feelings that you have. We have really good referrals to therapists. If anybody needed something that we couldn't offer, we can also refer you someplace close by where you live.
That's perfect.
Wonderful.
That is perfect. Lauren Schneider, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, Lauren,
very much. You're
welcome. Thank you again.
I really can't thank you enough on behalf of my brothers. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's great.
Yes.
It's excellent. So informative. You guys have any final thoughts you want to share?
Two birthdays. A six-year-old, Evan, who is a big fan of ours.
Cool.
So birthday shout out to Evan. And then Evan. Sequoia's birthday was yesterday.
Happy birthday, Sequoia.
Long time listener.
So happy birthday to those two, Evan and Sequoia.
Yeah.
Make this year a wonderful year. And to everyone else who joined us today, thank you guys for listening. And I hope you found the show informative. Yeah. I definitely learned some great stuff.
That was a great show.
But thank you guys for making DDJF what it is. And with that said, we're going to close out the show. We'll be back next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Until then, be safe, be blessed, and enjoy your family and spread love. All right. Adios, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.